Thank you for listening to the Covert Nerd Podcast. It means a lot to me that you take time out of your day to hear what I have to say. Today's episode is a little different. It's not necessarily nerdy, but it's what we like to nerd out about. And I got to sit down with a couple of great guys and talk about wrestling and hear their stories and the things they like and don't like about the wrestling world. And I hope you enjoy the topic. If you want to engage me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can send me an email and you can find all those links at covertnerd.net. So without further ado, let's dive right in and nerd it up with Jesse and Billy. I've got some great friends here, and we're going to discuss old school wrestling or new school. I don't know where it ends up going, but I'll just have Jesse and Billy introduce yourselves real quick. Just let everybody know where they can find you at and a little bit about what you do. So we'll start with Jesse.
All right. I'm Jesse, and you can listen to me say words and things at the Grolux Podcast, GrolluxPodcast.com. And I also do a bunch of crazy Rayman videos for the Last Starfighter Entertainment Group.
Those are hilarious. I'll put a link in the show notes for those. Whoever's listening can check those out.
And he's an awesome artist.
Yeah. Oh, yes. That too.
Yes.
Tank Zombie Studios.
Tank Zombie Studios, yeah.
It's hard to
yeah, like, I should have like a
sell
checklist.
Yourself. But so I'm Billy. You can hear me on the Daydream Instruction Manual podcast. We are all part of the Last Starfighters Entertainment Group, producing our own various forms of content, whether it be comics or videos or, you know, anything of that nature. And that's the Last Starfighters Entertainment Group. You can find it on Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, everywhere.
That's true. We're everywhere now.
Yeah, you're right. And I play in some bands, Graveyard Smash, Before I Burn, Secret Weapon, Graveyard Smash, and Before I Burn have music out on the interweb machines. Just, you know, type in those names and maybe put Omaha to, you know, narrow it down. And you can find me on Twitter at Zombilly Horror.
Okay. And so, I'll try to include all the contacts in the show notes, so when you're listening, you can easily find them. And I'm Lee with the Covert Nerd Podcast at covertnerd.net. We were at an event back in Grand Island, and I don't know how wrestling just came up, and I think it was you, Jess. You're like, you like wrestling too? And then we just started.
You guys were talking about wrestling over at the Daydream Instruction Manual booth, and you were talking about like promos, and I couldn't help myself because I was just like right across the staircase.
Wait, what?
What were we talking about over here?
Yeah. And so we started like, we need to do an episode on this. So I'm like, okay, well, yeah, let's plan a date and just talk about it and maybe probably doing a lot of reminiscing. So if you're listening now to this, you may have a certain era of wrestling that you like. And so that's what I kind of want to start with. When did you start watching wrestling and what caught your attention or what grabbed you and pulled you in? Because I know some people watch it or see it for the first time, they're like, this is stupid, you know, a bunch of guys sure. In tights running around, and they're like, okay. But me, when I started, I'll start first, and I started watching it in 87, and it was after WrestleMania 3. Now I grew up out in the country, so we didn't have cable. Mm-hmm. So my friends were watching wrestling on TBS, the NWA, that was pre-WCW time on TBS, and they were talking about it, and I was like, okay, well, I can't watch it anyway. But Superstars of Wrestling came on Saturday mornings at about 11 o'clock, and I was like, what is this? I've heard of this. The WrestleMania was huge, 3, with Hogan and Andre, so that was kind of a big deal. And I was like, well, this is really cool. You know, you got these characters. It's a lot like it's a soap opera for men, essentially.
Sports opera.
But, you know, you have these over-the-top characters. It's kind of like comic books. You have these guys participating in the storyline, and they've got these things going on, and they're just very charismatic and very energetic. And so it was on every Saturday, and that's kind of what caught my eye, and I didn't miss a Saturday after that. So that was WWF time frame, you know, Hogan and
sure.
Andre and Macho Man, Jake the Snake Roberts, all those kind of old late 80s school wrestling. So that's kind of what caught my eye. So that's where I got started. So I have probably a nostalgia for that time period, whether it's actually that good or not, but that's kind of where I got started. So I don't know. When did you guys get started?
I probably have a similar story, but I couldn't tell you what year. I mean, I think about the same kind of time frame, about the same kind of situation, because I did. I also lived out in the country, and so it was. Yeah, it was whatever was on.
Yeah, you got three channels.
Yeah, Saturday mornings was probably part of what hooked me, and then they did like the main event.
Yes, Saturday night's main event.
Yep. Those are the two things I remember most about it as a kid, and then you know, like you just kind of tied into it. Like, I mean, Andre the Giant was huge in more than one way, right?
So yeah.
It's hard not to watch him, you know.
Okay,
like how is Hulk Hogan gonna beat this guy?
Yeah. You know?
Like, that's impossible. And then we're like, but he did.
He body his vitamins.
Yeah, he took his vitamins. Saying his prayers. Took his vitamins.
He had to have all three things.
Yes, was it saying your prayers, eat your vitamins, and
do your exercises?
Well, he has
exercise players.
Say your prayers, eat your vitamins. He had the three commandments, and the one was I don't remember what the third one was, but yeah.
Bench press cars.
You know. Yes, yeah. exactly.
For me, I was I didn't grow up in the country. I just grew up down the street. Country. Yeah, anyway, I was at my neighbor's house and they got WrestleMania 10.
Okay.
Which I think was like 1994.
Mid-94 then, because 84 was the first one.
Yeah.
With Mr. T and Hulk Hogan.
Right. Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, some of it had to have been playing before that, and maybe I just wasn't paying a lot of attention, but I remember them saying during a specific match, they're like, oh, this match is gonna suck, because it's two bad guys against each other. Like you said, it's the drama, it's the superhero, it's usually good versus bad, and it was the ladder match between Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon.
Oh, okay. Ooh. Yeah, that was a big one.
Yeah. You know, for the Intercontinental title, two titles, you know, on the line. You know,
right.
I don't have to get into the entire storyline of it, but they said that whole thing, oh, it's two bad guys against each other. And I just like, I don't know, something just caught my attention. And then watching this spectacle of what's considered like the first like mainstream ladder match, I saw that. I'm just like, oh, wow. You know, this is so good. And like Shawn Michaels, he didn't even win that match, but he became my favorite wrestler. That was my start.
Okay.
WrestleMania 10, neighbor's house.
So that kind of sold it for you. Like, I'm in.
Yeah. And, you know, after that, it just became a thing of, you know, WWF was the most accessible. And then, you know, over the next few years, you know, starting to really get into it, like just before the Attitude Era kicked in like 97-ish, you know, WCW started to come into the fold. And then ESPN Classic showed like old stuff, like from like the 50s and 60s.
Huh.
Like,
oh, really? Like, I didn't know that.
And like even before that. So I was watching like old black and white stuff. Like I consumed it, learning, you know, everything like that I could get my hands on. So
okay,
a lot of WWF, WCW, and the old stuff that was on ESPN Classic.
That's interesting. I didn't know they showed the old stuff.
Old stuff.
So what? That's a good question. Then okay, so you were watching it, you know, early '90s, mid '90s, and then you're watching stuff from the '50s and '60s.
What, something like that.
What really? What's the biggest difference in your opinion that you saw after watching a ladder match with Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels, and then watching something from the '60s or '50s? Because I've seen clips here and there, but I really haven't watched a lot.
I mean, you know, obviously, like it became. Not only because it wasn't in black and white anymore, but, you know, it became more colorful. You know, WWF at the time was known more for having characters.
Yeah.
Occupations, you know, they had a dentist. They had
the barber.
They had a barber. They had a dump truck
the
driver,
repo man.
The repo man, you know, and it just goes on and on.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was more like Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? And then, yeah, watching the old stuff, you know, it was, you know, slower paced. You know, the announcers weren't really building up excitement. They were calling it more like you would a boxing match. So, you know, I suppose those were, you know, some of the differences.
I didn't know this, but when I was researching it, the wrestling got its start in the carnival circus. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That was all. That's where you have the carny language. Yep. About the jobber, heat, getting heat, kayfabe.
Yeah.
All those terminologies came from.
Yep.
Started in the circus, and I think that's probably when you were watching that from the 50s or 60s, it still had a lot of that. That's probably what they were watching back in the maybe even the 20s, or was similar to that. Where, like you said, now, well, not now, but even in the 80s and 90s, it got a lot more, there's a lot more storyline, scripted, air quotes, than it was, say, back then.
Yeah, you know, it'd be, I agree with the story. You know, I mean, it was all scripted.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
You know, predetermined.
There we go.
I assume that the carnival stuff was probably a lot more like the cartoony version.
Yeah.
You know, you probably had like the big fat guy that gets shot with the cannon versus the bearded lady or something.
Yes.
I would imagine that was the type of stuff did. But then it got into a point of like, they wanted legitimacy and the kayfabe of this is real. So it looked more, again, like a boxing or a roaming Greco.
The drama of the grudge match.
Right.
These guys really just don't like each other.
Yes. Right.
You know, and it usually wasn't over the top outfits. It was very simplistic and it was more strong style than it was acrobatics.
Yes. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, it's definitely a lot more high flying now than it was even, say, 30, 40 years ago. You can tell in the late 80s, you started seeing that transition when Vince McMahon kind of started dominating. It went less from grappling to more high-flying, faster, like you said, a lot faster pace than what you were watching on ESPN Classic.
And so, just as a side note, if you hear a baby upstairs, sorry.
Okay. That's okay. That's okay.
It's the baby face.
It's the baby face.
It's the baby face. You know, if he does it too much, I might have to go heel upstairs. Just kidding.
Bring some heat.
I'm not going to lay any smack down.
Do you guys listen to any of the wrestling podcasts, like Something to Wrestle With Bruce Pritchard? That's a good one.
Not that one as much, but okay. Yeah, I listen to quite a few. I'll listen to the main one that I listen to now is Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins, the Major Wrestling Figure podcast, because they're all fans of toys so they talk about a lot of that. I listen to the Stone Cold one from time to time. Colt Cabana is an independent wrestler. Is Edge and Christian, which there's just seems like it probably came to a hiatus. I listen to quite a few of them.
I listen to the Something to Wrestle With Bruce Pritchard. Bruce Pritchard, if you don't know, is the Brother Love character back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
But then he did a lot of the writing and booking behind the scenes, and so he gives some...
And he's back now.
Yes, he is back in WWE now.
Yeah.
But he tells just a lot of stories that you didn't really know as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, talking about how the business runs behind the scenes and coming up with ideas and working with wrestlers. What are they like in the background when they're not in the ring, and lots of different stories. Arn Anderson has another one out too. He came out with one recently with Conrad Thompson is the one that
Conrad does a lot of that. He's like the major wrestling podcast guy right now. He's not on air, he's like getting a lot of them started.
Right? Yeah,
you know, with Eric Bischoff.
I would say that's the one that I listen to most frequently.
83 weeks.
Yeah,
yep.
That's as far as big podcast wrestling podcasts go. That's the one.
Yeah, it's just they've got some excellent stories in there about.
It's such a fascinating world.
Oh, it is, and how it's changed. He was talking. We worked a lot with Mean Gene Okerlund, and Mean Gene was telling a story that he was. If you don't know, Mean Gene was an announcer back in the '80s and and 90s in wrestling, and he had to do all these, you know, he'd do those little vignettes and little promos before each match. Mm-hmm. And he said, I really loved working with Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage, because when he would do these promos, he said, we'd do it one time and that's it. Yeah. They nailed it every time. He said, I loved working with those guys because we only had to do it once. There was virtually no script. It was very soft scripted. He said, compared to today where it's pretty much scripted,
yeah,
exactly what you say, at least in the WWE. Now the federations might be different, but
they kind of set the standard though.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was really different how they would, they really didn't know when they got in the ring. They knew the outcome.
Yeah.
But they really didn't know what everything was going to happen, how yeah, it was going to go from the ring of the bell until the end.
Yeah. There's, you know, the term is calling it in the ring.
Yeah.
And then there's others who famously like to, you know, they're not going to be on their toes to do it. Like, they need to plot everything out.
Yeah, and everybody's different. Yeah. Like he said, Randy Savage is one that liked to work the match prior a lot ahead of time. Yeah. But other ones, like he was talking about Hogan and Sting and some of the others, like, as long as we know the finish, we'll just figure the rest out mm-hmm. in the ring, which is, well, yeah, was kind of interesting how they work that, how they're able to do that.
Man, it's... After a while, you know, it becomes a rhythm, you know, but like I've become pretty close friends with some local wrestlers, like in PWP,
yeah,
live, and have even gotten in the ring and kind of like, you know, done some training sessions and stuff.
Yeah, cool.
And like even going at a slow pace, it's moving so fast.
Oh yeah.
That like, and you have to base things off of signals or like just a real quick, like you go up for a quick tie up and then they say real quick what's going to be going on and then you get thrown into the ropes. Like, it's just so like, yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's mind boggling. Like how fast it is.
You've also done some ring announcing.
Is yes.
That, yeah. Yep. And so is that, it's easy to criticize. Like I'll watch a WWE.
Sure.
Of like, you know, you have your favorite ring or color commentators or
yeah,
announcers
yeah.
or whatever. And it's easy to criticize, but it's gotta be tricky to do because you have to like find a break in the action in order to get your point. Like,
yeah, across. For sure. You know, I haven't done commentating.
Oh.
I've just been the ring announcer, so...
Okay, so you're introducing the wrestler.
Introducing and announcing, like, who... You know, the outcome and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there's times, too, like, you get a sheet of the match that's going to be happening, where they're from, all that stuff. You don't know the outcome or whatever, so you have to really still be paying attention. There's times where, like... You think that you're just going to be like, okay, I'll just announce, you know, the winner, you know, trying to keep this stuff quick examples. But like at the last one that I did, the wrestler, Preston Maxwell came out and he was not supposed to be wrestling. He showed up in his nice clothes. Then he finds out he's in this match. He's just talking and talking, and his opponent, Lars Metzger, was in the ring, and the referee was like wrapping him up, and he's like, "You're done. I'm gonna." And he's like, "Don't you do that thing where he rings the bell, you know?" And he's really good. He's really funny. None of this was I don't even know that we said hi to each other prior to the match. And again, I'm just the ring announcer, so I was like, right. "Well, I guess it's time for me to start announcing the match." And as I was saying it, he's like breaking up what I'm saying. He's like, don't you say his name and his opponent. Don't do it. Lars Metzger. And and he's like, he just kept doing that. And like, so it was really fun to play off of each other.
Okay.
And yeah. I would take this break and then he would go. And so doing that as a commentator,
uh-huh.
and so it all just plays off of each other, and it somehow just works great.
Huh.
But the commentators probably, unless it's something major, I don't think they know the outcome because they want their real reaction.
Reaction, yeah,
huh.
Yeah. Unless they're involved with the storyline,
it's all just such on the spot.
Yeah.
Spontaneity. Even as scripted as things are, it's so on the spot that
it is.
That you've got to be really good at what you do.
It's like magic.
Yeah, really. Yeah. That brings up a good point about what do you guys think on promos? Who in your opinion, like using the terminology, cut the best promo over the last years that you've... Do you have any memorable or characters or maybe in-ring promos that you remember?
I mean, we kind of talked about this a little bit the Grand Minicon a little bit. So you kind of already know what my answer is going to be.
Sure.
But, I think there's been a lot of really good promos out there, but I think The Rock probably reinvented the promo a little bit.
Yes.
Maybe before him, probably Roddy Piper was
one of the favorites. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I kind of forgot about him.
Not even just like the promo, like he kind of invented Piper's Pit, that like side show type of thing. I mean, like this is, we're talking about how wrestling is almost like a sideshow. Well, then he created the sideshow to the
sideshow.
Just when you think you know the answers, he changes the question.
That's right.
He was just a character in general, but I think I remember hearing from Bruce Pritchard, he was talking about Roddy Piper was really good at... You didn't really give him a script. You just kind of give him a topic, and he could just go nuts with it.
Yeah.
Just like you talked about the spontaneity.
Yeah.
A lot of that. And The Rock was excellent. He could just move a crowd. He was really good at reading the crowd and kind of reacting to it. He's a Stone Cold. Steve Austin was really good at that, I think.
Well, and to this day, I don't think you give those guys scripts. I think
Stone
Cold comes out and does his thing. I
think they refuse scripts. Yeah. John Cena is a more modern one that he pretty much refuses scripts. Like, he kind of just does his own thing.
There's a few that they'll still let do their thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, others just go out and do... know what they're told.
There's you can find it on YouTube. There's a clip where Roman Reigns and John Cena are in the ring doing a promo, and Roman forgets his lines, and John Cena says, "I'll just wait." And you can see on Roman Reigns' face, he's like, "I don't know what to do." And finally, Cena pipes in. He's like, "Well, you know, if you're gonna play with the big boys, you got to learn how to do a promo." Just right there in front of everybody. He goes, "See you, fourth wall," and just throws Reigns under the bus.
Yeah.
It was bad.
It was funny, like, you know, to get, you know, just briefly, like, PG-13, but it happened in Omaha, like, a week or so after that happened. They were having this little promo with each other, and, you know, you could see it on the giant screen, the Titantron, like... Roman Reigns forgot to zip up his pants. And I think it was John Cena who like called him out on it. He's like, "You know, you're supposed to be a professional. You come out here with your pants unzipped," and Roman just right on top of his like, "Unzipped. I busted it." It's like, yeah, there you go.
nice save.
Yeah, like that, you know, like, "Oh, you want to try and top me? Like, I'll show you, like I'm the man."
Yeah.
What about you? Yeah, he was much better that week.
Yeah.
It was like, he had his flub week, and now he's like, "Nope, I'm ready."
Well, you know, they were working a show, you know, they do those where they work a show for 3 months, 6 months together.
Yeah.
So that was probably one of them. What about you, Billy? Promos. What memorable promos, or who do you think cut the best promos over the years?
It's an interesting thing. Like, there's kind of like, you know, a couple categories for it. You know, I do think The Rock is one of the great ones. Mm-hmm. But taking that line specifically, that is one of his lines.
Oh, yeah.
The great one.
One-on-one with the great one.
Smell what The Rock is cooking. The millions and millions.
Yes.
On and on. It's a lot of buzzwords.
Yeah, yes.
Not that he couldn't just go off the fly and do things, but it's sticking to a lot of, like, I'm gonna do something big and funny and memorable. Where then there's people that, like... Piper or CM Punk.
CM Punk,
He's
another one.
Where they would just go and they'd just be able to talk and talk, and it wasn't about, you know, sure, there's going to be little catchphrases here and there, best in the world or whatever. But most of the time for people like that, it was just, "I'm just going for the throat. I'm saying what I gotta say.
Yeah.
And it's just powerful. You know, so someone like Shawn Michaels, you know, he wasn't this big promo guy, but he could just talk. Recent memory or, you know, whatever, you know, even though he's got some stuff going on in media and whatever, but like, you know, Enzo Amore.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he's a good promo.
He's
for sure.
Amazing. Like, yeah, he says he has this notebook of just over 1,000 things to say. He just, you know, he goes out and says them all. And you know, those are more like almost catchphrase and funny things too. But like, he just has this whole Rolodex.
Yeah.
And after he uses it, he crosses it off.
Sure.
It's like, wow.
The
like,
catchphrases are almost like a breath, like a,
yes,
like, okay, yep. which bit am I going to use? And in the meantime, how you doing?
Yeah. That's a great way to put it too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, when you need to take that moment to like think or whatever, like you can go into the greatest hits.
Yeah.
But then he's gonna come out of it with ugh. It's like, wow.
Here's something you haven't heard. Yeah.
Right.
Kind of at the very end, nail it at the end, or yeah, sell it, or whatever you want to say at the end.
Yeah. But yeah, Paul Heyman, Mr. Kennedy.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mr. Saul Kennedy.
Many. So yeah. So many. yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin Nash, Scott Hall.
Oh yeah.
It just goes on and on.
One that I kind of forgot about, but it was Jake Roberts.
Yeah.
Jake Roberts would do. He wouldn't. He was notorious for not being loud. He was the one that, yep, wouldn't yell into the mic. He
exactly.
just did a quiet. I'm gonna go. You know, he just had that persona that was just a different, whole different character.
Yeah, and thinking about that, Chris Jericho.
Oh yeah.
Jericho-holics.
I mean, you know, he changes all the time. Like
right.
the speaking slowly and methodically. Like when he was a bad guy, he would just. He would talk slow and he would use big words and call people troglodytes. Gelatinous troglodytes.
Yes.
And they'd be like, what is he even saying?
Yeah, yeah.
It would
you stupid idiot.
But then he would go in and, you stupid idiot, drink a little bit of the bubbly.
Yeah.
And
you just made the list.
And you've made, or like, you've got it. You got the word it. Over.
Right.
Like, it's just like, how does this guy just keep always
entertaining too?
You know, and it's cool because like he's even admitted at times too where he's like, and I don't remember what the catchphrase was, but he's like, I'm gonna get this over. And like it bombed. So like people like him go out and they, you know, they do stuff that just don't work.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and when you listen to those podcasts, when they talk about behind the scenes,
yeah,
that's what they're doing. They're just kind of throwing stuff against the wall and let's try this. And it didn't work. So, okay. Well, and some of the things, just like in life, some of the things you think people would like, they don't. And this one thing you did over here, what you think would never work, and people love it.
Yeah.
What was it like Cena and The Rock, like the people's elbow was
the people's elbow,
like a joke or something, and it just got over gangbusters.
Yes.
So they had to keep doing it. I think the
you can't see me
five knuckle shuffle. Yeah. Yeah, that seemed like a thing that was starting to really become popular during the Attitude Era. Was like, I almost wonder if they just tried to like get the most stupid things over.
Right.
Like, you know, Scotty Too Hotty was doing the worm.
Yeah, right.
Like,
yes,
and it just like, to go back to The Rock or John Cena, you know, Rock would cross his arms.
Yeah.
Cena would do the you can't see me. Like, it became a thing of like, Scotty Too Hotty would just keep adding things. He would like point to the crowd on this side, then point to the crowd on this side. Then he would jump on one leg in a circle, and then he would jump, go down and do the worm, and then he would just like stomp on you.
Yeah.
It was like there was all this ridiculous buildup for then just.
They all kind of had their
simple move.
Yeah.
What do you think? So now that you, like you said, you were talking, I was thinking of the classic wrestling you were talking about where it was all in ring. That was your persona. You didn't have to have mic skills. You didn't have to have necessarily a finisher. I don't know. Maybe they did have finishers back then. But,
yeah, I mean.
But I think it's really you as a wrestler, especially in the late 80s and 90s, you had to have in-ring skills. So you had to be good there, but you also had to have good mic skills.
Yeah.
You had to have good off the cuff skills of being able to change what you're doing in the ring and out of the ring quickly. So I think the wrestlers that maybe couldn't adapt to that in the 80s and move that direction maybe got left behind. Like Paul Heyman, for example, he was the mouthpiece for Brock Lesnar because Brock Lesnar, not very good at the speaking skills.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And so I think that was probably how wrestling had morphed from more of the grapplers in ring to you got to have a persona outside the ring too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's a great episode of South Park on that. None of them care about the wrestling. They just want to hear the crazy stories going on.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, that's the big thing of being a good person on the stick. That's what they call it, you know.
Yeah.
A talker. I mean, the wrestling is important. Obviously, it's wrestling. But, like, the your talking ability and the ability to sell to people, to the crowd, is that story. And, yeah.
Especially as a heel. I know lots of people talk about, as a heel, you have to really create the heat, they call it, and get the crowd to hate you.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot of mic skills. But in the wrestling ring, you gotta cheat. You know, you gotta do all these these heel things that the baby faces wouldn't do.
You know, and heels have almost a harder job as well, because one, again, you have to have them, get them to hate you. You have to, the point of being the bad guy is to make the good guy eventually look good.
Yes.
Right. You know, so like if you pay attention to Paul Heyman a lot, he will talk about like the accolades of Brock Lesnar's opponent.
Yeah.
You know, you are great. You do blah, blah, blah. Like you're awesome at what you do. But Brock Lesnar will, you know, do whatever.
Spoilers.
But the point of it is, you know, like you're hiding in there. You're talking about how great that person is.
Yeah.
You're not just going, I hate you and you suck. Well, then, like, who cares about them if they suck?
Right.
Like, yeah. So that's a great talking skill.
Yeah. It's a little piece of psychology.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, this whole thing, the in-ring, getting the crowd to hate you, like you, being good on the microphone, it's all a psychology play. How am I getting you into the story, and how am I taking you along with me on the story, and how to get the payout at the end? Because all these stories that we talk about, it has the payoff.
Yeah.
And that's what they're trying to get, is a good payoff. And sometimes the payoff works, and sometimes the payoff doesn't work at the same time. Yeah. But it's all part of that personality. And I think that you talk about pop. They have that pop, crowd pop.
Yeah.
All of that fits in there. Along with that is their entrance music, which I want to talk about next, is entrance music. That's part of the whole character, is that music. What is the best entrance music, theme music that you remember that you just like, wow, as soon as that music hits, the crowd just goes nuts.
You know, for recent stuff, like ones that, as soon as they were played, it's like, whoa, that's really good. Like Robert Roode's Glorious.
That's the one that, yep, that's where my brain went, yeah.
You know, Finn Balor's. You know, and they're able to incorporate, you know, movements and excitement into to the beats of the music. Bray Wyatt's, you know, with the, it was so different, you know, with the Fireflies song.
Yeah.
Of course, there's, you know, you can go back to like the glass breaking for Stone Cold.
I was thinking Stone Cold.
I was thinking Edge. You know,
you think you know
you
me.
Think you like, know me. You know,
some of it was just like, you know, you don't even necessarily think that some voice mysteriously going, oh, you think you know me, you think you know me, like would really do something, but like just this indication that something big was about to happen.
Yeah. Yes. And that's part of the whole package.
Right.
I think now I'm hearing the music, it triggers something in the brain. Okay, guess who's coming?
Yeah.
Goldberg.
Goldberg,
you know, and then not, again, you know, not just the music, but everything that's incorporated. You know, he had his entrance, his music would go off. He had something different than everyone did, and it was security walking to the ring, and then he would bash his head on a locker, and then he would come out, and the smoke would be going out, and then he would blow the smoke out of his mouth, and then he, like, does this punch, kick, and fireworks go
stand
off.
Stand in the shower of sparks.
Yeah, yes, like, yes.
Man, that had to hurt. He just
what are you doing?
Keeps going. And
so you don't have any body hair. Because otherwise you'd start on fire.
That actually, funny story. Okay, if you guys remember in the Attitude Era, they had with Gangrel and Edge and Christian, you had the Brood.
Yeah.
And they would come up out of the stage with the circle of fire.
Yeah.
I guess one time Edge was coming out and he wearing a robe and mm-hmm. the robe caught on fire. And so now if you watch some of the entrances after that, he lifts up the robe when he walks over the fire.
Oh yeah.
I guess at a house event he caught on fire.
Yeah.
So
you know, and that one in particular is so interesting. Like people still talk about that to this day and love the Brood and the music. You know, it has
that was the whole entrance, yes.
You know, like this, that breathing, like
yes.
the vampire thing and the, you know, spraying the blood. Like listening to the Edge and Christian podcast, I didn't even realize this. And like almost no one does. Like that didn't even last a year.
Right. That was a short.
But it felt like
it was around
it was
for a long
time.
And then there was the new Brood.
The new brood. The parties.
Yep. Yeah, Gangrel talks about it. I saw an interview on YouTube and that whole gimmick was done to get Edge over.
Yeah.
The whole thing was just for Edge. Yep. It had nothing else to do with the other two. But I mean, they were along for the ride.
Sure.
But he said that whole thing was to get over. But just back to that, the whole music and entrance is just all part of the characters have to, it's all part of their persona and all part of the mm-hmm. anticipation. And some of the, you can go and look on YouTube at different, the crowd pop. And one of them you talked about was the breaking of the glass. It was in 97 when you had the Monday Night Wars. So mm-hmm. you had WWF and WCW. And that was when the popularity shifted from the WCW being number one on TV to the WWF. When Mankind beat The Rock for the title,
mm-hmm.
and you hear the glass break, and the whole arena just erupts. You can hear it. I mean, and people are just jumping. And that was, I think, what this YouTuber, and I think you'll probably agree, was the biggest pop that you've ever heard. And it was huge. Hogan had it some in the 80s when you heard Real American, everybody went nuts.
Yep. Sure,
but
sure.
This one was, you could tell, it was people went crazy.
Yeah. No one was, and I don't know if ever will be bigger than what Stone Cold was.
Yeah,
right.
You know, Hogan is obviously like right. You know,
because he was first kind of superstar.
I mean, I would almost say maybe Hogan is a little more of a household name. Like,
sure,
you know, but as far as like the popularity in wrestling goes. It is the biggest time of wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
You know, WWF and WCW each had like 6 to 7 million viewers. You know, Monday Night Raw is still the most viewed, and it's only like 4 million.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And you had 10 to 15 million people watching at the same time every Monday night. That's as big as it gets.
I think you said that when we were talking, if you think about that. So you had 6 million watching WCW and 6 million watching WWF.
Yeah.
You had 12 million people watching wrestling on a Monday night, which is insane if you think about that, like compared to today.
Everyone was talking about that era, too. You know, like I was kind of in a break between, like I watched wrestling as a kid and then I kind of fell off.
Me too. Yep.
My break was after that. But
and then I came back and like it had already all happened, but like everyone was talking about the fact that Hogan was a bad guy now.
Yeah.
And
was
like,
oh,
and that was a
and
huge
NWO
deal.
And
yeah.
I was like doing my, they called it sophomore experience. So I was going out to schools. It's pre-student teaching basically.
Yeah.
And so I went into my old high school and I was talking to my high school art teacher and she's like, I've got this kid and I'm kind of worried about him because he's talking about the New World Order. And does he even know what it is? And I was like, I think that's a wrestling thing.
I mean, it was a big deal though.
Oh, yeah.
I remember because, you know, the Attitude Era started getting really risque.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Attitude Era goes over to WCW as well, even though it was a WWF thing. But I remember because I was in elementary going into junior high when that was all going on. Yeah, that like you weren't allowed to wear DX or NWO shirts.
Oh, yeah,
right. You know, because they said suck it or rules and bones are meant to be broken. or yes. you know, like any yeah. anything like that.
How many kids got? They talked about that on a podcast. How many kids got kicked out of school because they kept saying "suck it"
mm-hmm.
to their teachers? Yeah,
Stone Cold's flipping off a Thor.
Yeah,
and he has yeah. Austin 3:16, and that's making fun of religious stuff.
Right.
And
yeah.
It was a big deal being in school at that time.
Oh yeah.
And like, I can't wear my favorite shirt. How am I supposed to promote my favorite wrestler?
Well, yeah. even like your baby face. I mean, these are the baby faces
yeah.
in a lot of
yeah. cases. The, Austin yeah. was the baby face.
Sting had a black bat and he's hitting people with it.
Yeah.
He looks
yeah.
like the Crow now.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's coming from the ceiling and he's beating people, attacking people from behind. And
yeah.
And, you know, the NWO is spray painting, yeah. you know.
The belts and everybody
yeah.
else.
Yeah.
I was kind of like you. I watched wrestling from about 87 to 92 and then kind of got out of it again. But then, yeah, the whole Attitude Era kind of, I watched some of it here and there and I was like, eh. But now I'm going back and kind of watching it because I'm listening to all these podcasts and mm-hmm. they're saying they're referencing the stuff from 20 years ago. And you go back and watch some of it. I was like, this is actually pretty good. They had some, like I said, The Rock and Stone Cold, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, that mm-hmm. whole yeah. thing in the late 90s was off the charts.
Yeah, you know, not to, you know, take your segue when you hit it, but since we're on it, you know, favorite era.
Yeah,
you know, that is mine. You know, for a lot of people, you know, you hear like, oh, you need to bring back the Attitude Era, this PG era is, you know, whatever. And to me, like, yeah, the antics and all that, you know, was fun, mm-hmm. of course, but like, that's not even what I loved the most about it. Like, what I loved about it was that since it was such a popular time, everybody was a star. Everybody yeah. was basically a main eventer.
Yeah.
It didn't matter where you were on the show. You were a big name, and everybody was in a storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Most people were in multiple storylines.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. Like, you know, look at it. You know, look at what we do as the Last Starfighters Entertainment Group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we, the three of us right now, are in our own storyline where currently, at the same time, other people from the Last Starfighters Entertainment Group are at Krypton Comics
right.
promoting their new comic book. You know, it just, we all have like these subsections of like, you know, Jesse, you are in talks of doing some stuff with Eddie on something else
oh, yeah.
that doesn't involve us. Like it goes into these separate sections,
yeah.
and that's what I loved about the Attitude Era was
yeah.
was everybody, you know, the New Age Outlaws may have been feuding with Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie, but at the same time, Billy Gunn is got this other thing going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's what I loved about it. Like everything was important. Everybody had had a story.
Yeah, and everybody was a draw.
Yes.
So they were talking about, just like you said, they could send on a card, they could put Stone Cold on a card in New York City
mm-hmm.
and have some mid-card people mm-hmm. and sell out the arena. They could put The Rock in Houston with a bunch of mid-cards, sell out that arena, and put, say, Shawn Michaels as the top draw in L.A. and yep. have a bunch of, and sell out every single one of those arenas on the same night.
Yeah.
That's how much of a draw there was in the late 90s in the Attitude Era. Every one of those. And they could, and that's just how big those guys were.
Yeah.
And that was their strategy. Bruce Prichard was talking about this, was they were using a strategy of not necessarily wanting to win the TV wars, but they really focused on house shows. They really wanted to put on a good product at house shows because they said, if we sell out house shows, just like in the music industry, he said, that's where the money is.
Yes. Because, yeah, that was the big difference between WWF and WCW was WCW for a good length of time, for 83 weeks.
Yep.
Yep.
may have been winning the ratings war.
Yeah.
But there was, I'm not saying that they always had, you know, they had good crowds a lot of times, but there were other times where they were begging people to come to shows.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
here's
yeah.
free tickets. Here's 1,000 free tickets being
yes,
handed out.
That's exactly right.
WWF was always sold out shows.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever go to live shows? I think that's what.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
A couple. I went to a WCW, and it was a cool one because there was a lot of names at this WCW house show, and I was surprised at it, just what you were saying. Like, there was a lot of open seats.
Was that in Omaha, or I guess yep. tell us? Yeah, that was yeah, in what, Omaha. When was it? And I guess who was some oh, of the cards?
It would have been. I mean, Sting and Flair were constantly feuding. Like, oh, it was yeah. kind of like a classic.
Yeah, feud. That's. Yeah.
But it was also the same time as I think was it. Because one of the big tag matches was Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko, and I believe it was against Rey Mysterio, and I can't remember who else.
So this is probably late 90s, you think?
Or yeah, oh yeah, yep.
Conan?
It might have been Conan, yeah. And so I remember that.
Was Rey wearing his mask?
I can't remember if he had lost the mask yet. I think he had lost the mask at that point.
It was probably Conan.
So this would have been late 90s. I mean, this is when the shift probably occurred.
Oh, yeah.
Where
by that time, it was...
Yeah, the 83 weeks were over.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You watch some of those shows in the late 90s, early 2000s, WCW, you can tell.
Oh, yeah.
It's starting to slip. So yeah.
I also went to a Thunder taping. It didn't seem like WCW so cool. came as...
No, like I said, I never got to go. My first one was 95, and it was a pay-per-view. It was In Your House. It was Shawn Michaels
cool.
versus Big Daddy Cool Diesel. Good friends, better enemies.
Okay.
And, Ultimate Warrior was there, Gold Dust. Yeah.
So this is Omaha?
Yes. Okay. It was in Omaha at the Civic Auditorium. I'm still mad at Eddie for tearing it down.
Right.
Eddie, if you're listening to this, we'll never forgive you.
Never.
this is Eddie Fazer, by the way, his co-host on Daydream.
Yeah, for those that, you know, don't know all of us.
Now you know.
It was the last appearance of... I think it was the last appearance of... The last televised appearance, I believe, of 1-2-3 Kid, Razor Ramon, and Diesel before they went to WCW.
Oh, okay. Wow.
If not the last, really, really close. Yeah, so that was awesome.
That's a pretty big deal. And for you being a Shawn Michaels fan, I'm sure that was like, whoa.
And that's still considered like one of, you know, his top matches and one of the better feuds and whatnot. Like, because that was a no-holds-barred match. And I remember Diesel went over and took the referee's belt and hung Shawn Michaels like from the top rope, like whoa. With the belt. And then he went and Mad Dog with Shawn. An Omaha native was in the front row. Diesel went and took his prosthetic leg off and was beating Shawn Michaels with it. And I was like 4 or 5 rows back behind the commentator. Oh, so it was just amazing.
Can you see yourself on the video?
No, I haven't been able to pick it out.
Okay. So what a cool thing though to be at a pay-per-view seeing your wrestler.
Yeah.
Literally 10 feet, 15 feet from you.
Yeah. That was my first one, and I've been to many, many more since.
Oh wow! Okay, yeah. I've only seen one. It was in 88 in Lincoln, and we saw this guy come out, and he's just going crazy, you know, bouncing around the ring, going out in the crowd, shaking the rafter or the barriers or whatever and there was this guy, and we're like, this guy is amazing, he's gonna go someplace because he's just off the walls. And we find out, oh, that's the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah,
he was the Dingo Warrior at the time.
Oh my gosh.
So he was the Dingo Warrior,
old school.
And then next year he beat the Honky Tonk Man for the title and all that stuff, and we're like, oh, this guy's crazy.
That's
and
really
sure enough
cool.
he shows up.
Yeah,
and we're like, isn't that the guy we saw? But he was the Dingo Warrior at that time.
Wow.
But yeah, so it's kind of interesting. But one thing I wanted to definitely get on is maybe the last thing here is we talk about fan casting movies.
Yeah,
what would your dream matches? You can take any wrestler from any time frame and pit them against anybody else. What are some dream matches that, if it could happen, I would love to see a match, and maybe why? Anything that's comes off the top of your head. I have a few if you guys, while you're thinking.
You know, kind of a common one over the, like, the last so many years was, and I agree with it, it would have been really cool to see Stone Cold versus CM Punk.
Okay, or, yeah,
that would be good.
You know, they're both, you know, more rugged. You know, they're not necessarily nice guys.
No.
You know, CM Punk being straight edge, Stone Cold being, you know, beer guzzler. It writes itself.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been really cool.
And they were around at the same time, but they never put him in a...
No.
Oh, okay.
By the time...
I guess it was 2011, I think, is when Punk left.
Left in 2013.
Oh, okay.
And I think he showed up in WWF or WWE, like, around... 2006.
Oh, okay, so he would have Stone Cold would have been gone.
Yeah, and Stone Cold was done by like 2001 or two or something.
His knees were pretty shot there towards the end.
Yeah, maybe a little later than that, but yeah, something like that. Shawn Michaels and The Rock. You know, these are all kind of common ones. They never really got to have a match. Barely any interactions at all. Undertaker, Sting.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, those are kind of the big, you know, common ones. But that I also feel like, those would have been
sure. Really cool. That Undertaker Sting, that's who the fans wanted to see at that last WrestleMania instead of Sting versus Triple H.
I was there.
You were there?
I was there.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Tell us about that a little bit. I want to hear a little bit about that.
Talking way too much.
Where was that at?
That was in San Francisco.
Okay.
It was at the 49ers Stadium. You know, that was the time. That was Sting's first WrestleMania.
That brought me back to wrestling.
Oh, really?
That was the one.
That's the one that brought, because I had, again, you know, I was really into it in college, and then I left it for a while. So I missed the whole CM Punk era.
Oh, you know,
and
okay.
I had kind of missed most of Daniel Bryan's whole thing. And
yeah.
That was like Daniel Bryan's last match, I think, before he announced his retirement
It was starting to get close.
Yeah, because I think he won the inter. Did he start that WrestleMania?
Yeah, well, that wasn't the one where he won like the world title.
No, Intercontinental.
Yeah, he won it there in a ladder match.
And then I think it wasn't too many more weeks or maybe a month later that he was announcing his in-ring retirement.
Yeah, it was something like that. But yeah, so you know, that is one of my greatest wrestling moments witnessing was Sting and Triple H. As much as it would have been cool to see Sting and Undertaker, the way that it all played out and not having any idea it was going to be like this. Like, first, you know, Triple H comes out with the Terminators.
Yeah.
I got the figure hanging up because, like, it was such a special moment.
Sure.
And, like, you know, being at the Hall of Fame and Arnold being inducted. So he was, he was kind of included in his opening video thing and, like... He said something like "Target terminated" or something like that.
Yeah.
And Triple H comes out in this Terminator armor and everything, and then he goes against Sting, and then it turns into the DX guys come to help Triple H, and it's the New Age Outlaws and X-Pac, and then all of a sudden, I was like, I looked at my friends and Amanda, my wife, and I was like. Because they all came running, sprinting down. I was like, NWO, they're not going to run. They're gonna walk down the ramp. And then they did. I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening. And then I'm seeing DX versus NWO.
Yeah.
And it's like, Sean is not out there. He's going to be, like, the final. And he was.
Yeah.
And I was losing my mind.
I can't imagine.
like I said, you know, the two biggest things, like those, you know, those were inspirations to me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
DX and the NWO and, you know, knowing the inner workings, you know, like Sean and Hunter and X-Pac and Hall and Nash being the clique, you know, and then they're like running both opposite shows. I'm like, yeah, these guys are, you know, and then yeah. seeing that all come together
yeah.
with Hogan and Sting and the New Age Outlaws included. I'm like, wrestling will never get better than
yeah.
this moment.
Yeah. It's just that, it's a
huge
that
marking moment.
The yeah. hit of nostalgia. You're like, I know they're not going to go at it, but just having all those guys yeah. facing each other yep. in the ring, I was like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
It was a good flashback.
Yep.
So that's awesome.
So that was one of the top wrestling moments that I've ever not only just witnessed,
watched.
But witnessed.
Yeah. Witnessed in yeah. person. What about dream matches, Jesse?
Oh.
What are a couple of dream matches that you just like to see that never came to fruition?
You know, kind of a weird one, and I don't know who has and hasn't really met in the ring, but I don't think these two have ever met in the ring, and I think it would have been a fun story. Would have been like a Bret Hart versus Kurt Angle.
Okay.
Because you've got
oh, yeah.
you got the Dungeon, you've got the Hart legacy,
yeah.
you know, you've got kind of that old yeah. guard of wrestling, and then you've got the, you know,
the Olympic champion.
Yeah, he won a gold medal with a broken freaking neck.
Yeah, he always brings that up. Yeah.
I think that, you know, they're both fun in different ways, you know, like yeah. Bret Hart is more straight-laced type of character, but I think that would have been played off pretty fun.
No, that is a cool one. I like that one. So, and then, you know, the USA versus Canada.
Yeah.
If they oh, wanted yes. to go that direction.
I didn't
direction,
even think about that.
Yeah.
That'd be perfect.
You know, there's so many things work out for it. Yeah, that yeah. would have been a beautiful one.
Then, you know, like I'm always booking Sting. I would like to see Sting always worked really well with Ric Flair.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would work really well against somebody like Randy Orton. Where Randy
yeah.
is just kind of a despicable,
yeah. Yeah.
But fairly
the Viper versus yeah. the Scorpion.
Yeah. yeah, there you go.
There's some fun pageantry there. Some,
yeah,
some interesting
like
storylines.
You take Sting so. During his heyday, maybe early '90s.
Are we doing Crow Sting or Surfer Sting?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I will. I always wanted to see the Surfer Sting make a comeback. You know,
I do too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just at this point, it's too late. But like in his, you know, in the mid run there, you could have brought back a Surfer Sting at some point.
Yep. I agree.
You should see him if you look up YouTube. He did a commercial for some shoes. And he's on a surfboard, and
oh, that's funny.
It's like, oh, it's pretty bad, but it's.
I was enamored with the Surfer Sting, but I didn't see a lot of
yeah.
Surfer Sting until like later on.
Yeah.
But I think there was like a commercial for yeah. it, and I was like, what is this guy? He's got that Hogan presentation,
yeah.
Yeah.
but he's so like dialed up to 11, like he's so excited yeah. all the time
yeah.
in that persona. So I always liked that, and so when Sting finally became a nice cross-section of the two, I was like, this is my Sting right
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
A little bit of that mystery, but I like it when you get amped.
Yeah,
yeah.
All excited with the bat. Yes,
oh,
the stinger,
yeah.
stinger howl.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I think during that run in WCW when he switched to the crow type Sting, where he didn't talk
yeah.
for a year
yeah.
straight, yeah. and then when he finally did, he won the title. He did
yeah.
the howl or whatever. It was kind of a deal.
Yeah, so. I like Wolfpack Sting.
Oh, okay. The red,
fun, yeah. fun and colorful. Yeah,
yeah. One of the some of the matches I'd like to see is The Rock versus, say, Macho Man Randy Savage.
Oh, yeah.
Late 80s
yeah.
Macho Man. And that's a segue maybe right back for just a second. Macho Man was a guy that too could cut some good promos.
Oh yeah.
And just and
Bring
I
the drop.
Yeah, yeah. The elbow the elbow drop. But I think Rock and Macho Man both have huge personalities. I think they would be a good match against
yeah.
each other. Another one would be maybe late 80s Ric Flair versus Stone Cold. I mean, you got two huge egos again.
Oh,
you got the legend
yeah.
of Ric Flair, and then you just got the attitude of Stone Cold.
And it's like not typical.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, some of them, you know, it was, you know, like Crow Sting versus Taker, like, you wanted that because it was mythological and dark.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
or, you know, Stone Cold and Punk, you know, it's perfect counterpunch. Like something like that, you know, it's a little different.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah. Some others, AJ Styles versus Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
I think you got those.
For sure.
Yep.
Yeah, Shawn Michaels during his heyday, maybe mid to late 90s, before he had his injury.
Yeah.
How about Sting versus Daniel Bryan?
Yeah.
Maybe Sting. Yeah. Surfer Sting versus Daniel Bryan. You gotta differentiate.
I'd like to see Surfer Sting versus eco-friendly Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, oh my god, yeah, that'd be fun, yeah.
Surfing is bad for sharks.
Right. Yeah. People on the beach, then they leave garbage. You
probably litter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another you're one out there with your fake spray tan, and you're in the sun.
Oh, geez.
Your carbon footprint is huge.
You're going down.
That face paint's getting in the water.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Why do you hate turtles, Sting? Why do you hate turtles?
Man, that's funny.
I think last one I was thinking of is trying to find somebody for late 70s, early 80s Andre the Giant. Because if you watch some of those videos, he could actually move back in the late 70s. Obviously, by 80s, you know, by WrestleMania 3, he's pretty well shot, but he was moving around pretty good. I'd like to see him against another maybe big guy, maybe like a Mark Henry or maybe against a Brock Lesnar type character, maybe Big Show.
Yeah.
If you want big.
You know, you could, you know,
Sid Vicious,
yeah.
In their prime, you know, Andre the Giant versus the Giant, you know, Big Show now, of course,
oh man, that would've been cool.
You know, one arm, one shoulder singlet versus one shoulder singlet.
Yeah.
That would've been a cool, you know, this big man brawl. Yeah, there's so many. You know, never spoiled to see a lot of really great ones that have happened.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of good matches.
What, Nakamura versus AJ Styles was one I didn't think I'd ever see.
Yeah.
Within WWE.
That was another. I got to see Nakamura's first NXT.
Oh, cool.
Match against Sami Zayn.
Oh, wow.
Well, even just that intro. For that intro.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's another one with the intro music where you're just like, okay.
It's a whole production
at that point. It's great. Well, do you know much about Nakamura?
Just a little bit.
He's famous, one of the most famous like current Japanese stars, and he's very like Freddie Mercury, Michael Jackson, fluidity-esque.
Yeah.
And then you mix that with like strong style wrestling.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh, it's a little bit jarring, but in a cool way. Yeah.
I think today we see a lot more because of the age we live in. Back when we were kids, you could only watch whatever they put on cable or the network. Now, with the age of the internet, I can go watch a pay-per-view in Japan because New Japan Wrestling is huge.
Well, and I mean, as of now, you can see NWA has a YouTube show now. You can watch full access shows. AEW is now on TNT. NXT is now on USA. SmackDown's on Fox. ROH and TNA are accessible. I think there's even like a women's. I don't know if it's Shimmer or I don't remember for sure. But, you know, we're back in a boom period.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It is all ultra accessible.
Right.
Yeah.
Easily. It's almost a little overwhelming right now.
It's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of have to pick your flavor and stick with it. There's really, it's a lot to take in, but I think as wrestling fans, there's a lot out there if you want to take your pick of whatever you can, whatever your flavor is or sample a little bit, all of it, and then swing back to whatever you're comfortable with.
What I'm excited about how this creates new energy. You know, like, that's what made the Attitude Era exciting was that competition.
Yeah.
Everything was new. The death of kayfabe. We didn't even talk about the screw job in Montreal.
There's too much talk about.
I mean, But I mean, like, it just changed the landscape. And so maybe we're going to see some of that again. Maybe not. But
maybe not. And
it's got potential.
I think each one of those federations or groups, whatever you want to call them, maybe they have different styles that they're sticking to. Maybe they are going to stay more old school, like in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, or maybe they're going to be just over the top and not be so PG friendly. I don't know, but
it's interesting because everyone now, like, I mean, WWE has, you know, NXT and their performance center where they can groom people into their style. That's a one aspect of it. But now it's more so, you know, most people come from independent wrestling, which were people who traveled the world doing different styles, doing luchador, doing European, doing, you know, Canadian, Japanese. Like, it's all different styles, and they're learning it all and traveling the world. And so a style is, you know,
yeah.
Just anything, you know. I suppose you just try and make it work for television again.
Yeah.
You know,
or even just the internet. You think about
well, sure,
of these gimmicks now are born and fostered on the internet.
Yeah, you know, it's super fun, like being on wrestling Twitter.
Yeah, which,
like,
oh, for sure.
Like,
yeah,
watching, like, you know, the whole 24/7 title.
Yeah,
and R-Truth and all that. Like, you can see a title change happen on Facebook Live.
Yeah.
You never... know, it's a 30-second video, but, like, what? I yeah. saw that. Was and it... it translates to what, like, now that's what's going to be on TV next right. week.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane.
Was it Zack Ryder who had the, he created his own internet?
He created
internet?
His own internet title. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And so then that's the, awesome. The action figure, you could buy the action figure yeah. with the internet title.
Yeah. yeah. It became a, like, I have it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's like awesome.
A fictional, non WWE existing title. It now yeah. became canon in a sense.
Yep,
it's like the $1 million belt.
Yeah,
back yes. in the '90s.
Yep. Yep. yeah, basically.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's hilarious. Well, I think I'll put a pin in this, guys,
sure.
and yeah. I think maybe we can
forever.
Yeah, we can revisit the kayfabe or any, I don't know, there's all 1,000 different directions sure. that we could take it, so we might have to do it again sometime and pick a different topic and go from there. So.
Sure.
Yeah, but I'd be down for sure.
Yeah, all right.
I do love hanging out with you guys.
We'll continue this feud.
yes. Oh, that's it.
That's it. It's over.
I'm out of here.
Gonna cut a promo. Yep. Also, next time we should all try to do our best impression of our wrestler, like if you do Hogan or Macho Man or whoever was your favorite. Because we all, I did that. We did.
Oh yeah.
You do try to cut your promo, but trying to
everybody would snap into a Slim Jim.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, trying to do the Randy Savage, your throat is just gone. Yeah, but anyway,
maybe we should fun. Do that. I like that idea. Yeah,
yeah.
We'll save
try
it.
To do our best
got a
promo.
Couple. We'll save it
and let the listener decide. Okay, who are they trying to be?
yeah.
Because that might
were
be,
we successful or not? Yeah,
you'll use all their catchphrases. They'll catch
on pretty
quick.
We should do. We can talk about this all later, but yeah, you know, we should do is like get like famous. Quotes like movie quotes or something,
and then do them,
but
as
do them a, as
yeah. yes.
Oh, I like that. Yeah,
I like that. Yeah. Reed, I think somebody at Late Night Comedy Show did that where he brought Andy Serkis on and he had him read tweets from President Trump as Gollum.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
so we
funny.
Could do something like that. Yeah. We'll pick out some tweets and you have to read them, and you have to read them as Stone Cold or The Rock or
like Jimmy Fallon does the sing this song, but in the style of this artist.
So. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
yeah.
So there we go. We can read our own tweets as, you know, Randy Savage or as Hulk Hogan or something like that. And
yeah.
That'd be fun. But anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
We should plug because it's a
yes.
wrestling
oh, yes.
a wrestling show. Our friends in Omug Comics just released their 8th issue of
yep.
Lenny Vernon Badass Trucker, and it is wrestling related. It's called The Ocho. It is the Tijuana Tangle.
Yep.
And it's all about luchador wrestling and Lenny having to get in the wrestling ring. So
In Spanish. Yes.
Which is a little bit meta because in the short film version of Lenny Vernon, Badass Trucker, he is played by a professional wrestler.
Yes, he is. So,
yes. That's
yes.
It's all that's coming full circle.
Yeah. yeah.
And
yeah.
it wasn't even planned that way. It
not
just
at all.
Happened to.
And if you didn't know, your ass better call somebody.
yeah. I don't know if it's you know, Jesse would be a real good promo guy.
I know, he would be. He is a character.
See, I would have to be the guy that, give me something to go off of. You would
yeah, just snap into it. Yeah. You're really good at, you snap yeah. into a Slim Jim. Yeah. Snap into a Slim Jim. I'll include a show note, or in the show notes, a link to the Oh Mug comic, so if you're listening and you want to go out and buy it or get a hold of them and pick their brain on what they're doing next, or keep an eye on them, what's coming, because I talked to Al and he's got all sorts of plans for upcoming issues.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be cool. Fun. I've gotten some
he's not slowing down at all.
No.
It's an exciting time for a lot of us, so.
Yeah. So stay tuned.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hope you liked the episode. Again, if you want to hit me up on social media, go to covertnerd.net and find all the ways you can find me via email, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I do want to give a quick shout out to those of you who do engage me on social media, and I can't list them all, but I'll try to include a few of them in each episode. So Jeff and Eddie from the Make Eternia Great Again podcast, the crew from the Growlix podcast, Jesse, Randy, and Melanie. Last but not least, Doug Holmes of the Grand Comic-Con. He's the one that puts the Comic-Con on in Grand Island. Thank you for engaging me on social media, and I really appreciate it. So if you want to, like I said, go to covertnerd.net and find out the ways that you can get in touch with me and give me ideas for new episodes that you want to hear about. So thanks again for listening. Until next time, nerd it up.